Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for TWiT specials is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Live special number 303, recorded September 12th, 2016. TechCrunch Disrupt. This TWiT Live special is brought to you by Braintree. Mobile app development can be complex, but integrating your payments no longer has to be. With Braintree, your business can accept nearly every type of payment from any device with just one integration. Learn more at BraintreePayments.com/TWiT. Hey, what's up? I'm Jason Howell, and I'm here in San Francisco at this year's 2016 TechCrunch Disrupt. This is a conference that's dedicated, it's devoted to startups. Basically, startups trying to get some attention, get some eyeballs on their products, their projects, whatever they happen to be, so that they can kind of move beyond, you know, the inception of their idea and into creating a viable product for everyone to be able to do. That seems to be the really, in the grand scheme of things, the hardest part of being a startup is kind of moving to that next level. That is what TechCrunch Disrupt is all about. So, you know, you can see behind me, it's a pretty darn busy event. There's a whole lot of stuff to check out. So why don't we get started? Let's go. All right, so I'm standing here at SyncThink with Dan Beeler. How's it going, Dan?
Great.
It's great to have you here, and obviously you brought your wares, so this is kind of what it's all about. SyncThink deals with concussions. So first and foremost, how do we take advantage of this technology or take a look at this technology if we don't have a concussion yet?
Right. So we see this as a quick mobile objective platform that can be used at the point of incident and as a monitor thereafter. So if you're an athlete and you're putting yourself in a situation where you might receive a concussion, then this can be used to assess, you know, at the point of incident, how if you have an ocular deficit. So do you have a timing deficit when shown predictable visual target?
Yeah. And I mean, we're so, you know, obviously this looks very VR. This is the year of VR. So we're seeing all sorts of VR technology, virtual reality, augmented reality, all that kind of stuff. We're used to this technology being something that we're looking out into. What's different about this goggle that allows it to look into you?
So this VR platform has been modified to do eye tracking. So around each of these lenses, we have infrared lighting. And behind these lenses, we have infrared cameras. So that enables us to track your eye motions at a very high rate. It also enables us to provide an assessment that's extremely quick. It takes about 60 seconds to produce an assessment. And that's because we're able to take data at a very high rate.
And are you, I mean, obviously, you know, concussions in sports, let's say football, you know, this is a conversation that's kind of ongoing. Is your vision that every team kind of has this technology at the sidelines, let's say, to be able to test players quickly, for as one example?
Yeah, absolutely. We see VR as the perfect platform to commercialize this technology. We've been supported by the military for about a decade, and we saw VR as the perfect way to provide a cost-effective solution at all levels.
Okay, cool. What is a player or someone who might be suffering from a concussion, what do they see when they put on the goggles?
So it's very simple. It's not meant to confuse the user. In fact, it's meant to be predictable. So it's a target moving in a circle. It does that for about 30 seconds while we track your eye motion. And one way to think about it is it's a characterization of how well you're synchronizing with that predictable motion.
What exactly is running here? So I see it's hooked up to a tablet. Is this a Surface tablet that we've got right here?
That's right. So it's an off-the-shelf Surface tablet. It's a mobile device. There's no battery involved other than the Surface tablet. And allows for about an hour of continuous use.
Is there anything that we can see real quick? I mean, how do we run a test? Do you have a concussion?
I don't have a concussion right now, at least not as of this morning. So we can start up an assessment. And, you know, I can take off my glasses. It's not necessary. It's not necessary that it's clear. It's just a visual stimulus. So if I hold this up to my face and tap the screen here, then I start a new assessment that lasts about 60 seconds. So the first half of this assessment is a calibration. And then we validate that calibration with several fixation points. So this just enables us to make sure that we're collecting data at the highest quality.
Excellent. And I'm looking down on the tablet. I can see your eyes kind of flashing around.
Yeah. And then it goes into the smooth pursuit assessment. So enabling that live video there allows the administrator just to make sure that, you know, everything's going well, that they're doing the assessment properly, and if there's any issue, that it can be caught immediately. So the circular assessment is just finishing up now. And then afterwards, we do an automated analysis. So we take the data that we're collecting now and then format it in a way that can be used immediately. And that's the entire assessment right there.
So it was super quick. I mean, it took a minute, and you've got all sorts of data kind of laid out to take a look at.
And so we show your eye motion relative to the display center and relative to the target center. And after an injury, what you'd see is a lot of variability along the path of motion of the target. But here, with no injury, I'm pretty well centered on the target position.
Dan Beeler, iSync Technology, this is really cool stuff. What's the next step for you guys?
So we've got deployments upcoming within NCAA in the military that we're really excited about. We're in 3 of the top 10 football programs in the country. And we see next year as a way to expand deployment significantly.
Dan, thanks so much for talking with us today. Really cool stuff. Standing here with Kanan from QBank. How's it going, sir?
Hello, sir. Very good. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
It's very nice to kind of get a closer look at this technology we were looking up before we came to the show to kind of see what it's all about. Tell us a little bit about QBank. I know it's a very social product. Where did you come up with this?
Absolutely. QBank is a social network for delegating your workload and creating an environment where your team can actually achieve in a group way or in a company way, and actually track all the performance of your people. We started this because we're actually project developers ourselves in heart, and we started developing pipeline of projects simultaneously and got to the problem where how do you actually keep all your team on track, on budget, and on time at the same time in the projects that last over a year, which is a very complicated solution for most of a SaaS industry in principle. So we created this network solution where you can actually develop very serious projects, and it's very serious in the sense of performance, and it's very real performance in numbers, in targets, and in scheduling. However, to keep the people actually focused and curious about the process, and to keep them coming back to our system every day, not only because they receive a notification email or something, we use this technique called gamification. Gamification is actually a concept where you take non-game context and use gamification, the gamified techniques to bring people's attention to what's happening today right now. So we come to a philosophy where if you actually know where you're going on the long term, you have to visualize your targets, you visualize your dream, and if you work hard for it and long enough, you will eventually get there. You'll eventually receive the awards you want. The only trouble is to be focused for a very long time and to be able to break it down to smaller pieces and delegate these pieces to your team members. This is why we decided to actually use gamification, and so people can visualize their targets much easier.
How exactly does the gamification process work? And especially when you're kind of mixing game elements in with something that's about productivity. I mean, I understand the motivation behind that, but, some places might not be cool with that. They want it to be more serious, more hunkered down. How do you manage that?
Of course. First of all, I think we separate two different mentalities within any organization. There are always the senior people who are very focused and very serious, and really it's a pure businessman who care about profits, and that's what matters in an organization. However, we understand that in any organization, there are so many people inside who don't care about company profits. They just care about, they get their salaries, and they care about their everyday experience at the company. So we try to kind of fit both of the psychology in the sense of top people can have a very thorough financial element and actually keep track of personal performance of each team member, group, or a company in all layers. However, for all the people who are developing things, like we call them team members, they cannot always compete between each other because there are so many of them. They always know that when they actually done something in a company, it is being appreciated. And quite opposite as well. If they actually screw something and it actually doesn't work, they will receive the fail sign into their records that will stick with them for quite a long time.
I really hope you never have to see that, basically.
Oh my God, definitely. People are so, they're getting stressed about it. Yeah. Even though we try to make it as a last reserve, you don't get any fails automatically, and only your superior can give you a fail, really, because we don't want people to get many fails, so not to get them depressed about it. But they always know it's an option.
So I'm very curious to see real quick kind of how this is laid out in the interface. Take me through this just real briefly here.
When you start in our system, you get to the environment, which is called tree. It's really an environment where you have a number of companies simultaneously, and each company has their own page. This page is like a, we call it a little constructor, it has a hierarchy with the top people, the board members and executives on top, and a whole list of team members. But then you actually invite them from social networks, and you can allocate them to their role very simply by a simple drag and drop. The cool thing about it, you can create a new teams, and each team will have their specific target and a specific person who is in charge of achieving the target. So everyone knows what their responsibility is, that we know that we can build unlimited amount of teams, and each team can have a basically unlimited amount of projects. Once you actually have a project, it has a very thorough Gantt chart, which we call it a very gamified Gantt chart, and it's a very brand new look on it. It's the main difference that you actually see awards within a Gantt chart, and nothing in a Gantt chart will be closed unless the senior person actually approves the completion of that project and gives you the award. Unless the award is given, that today, as you see, it tracks all the activity within a company that actual for today, and it moves it every day along its side. So if something is due and it's not in place and a team member didn't do his job, you will see a lot of red. You will see a lot of notifications to all the people who are responsible for this or monitor these events. And people generally see each other in a sense of achieving specific award on a screen. And I think this is something different. Of course, we can have a fancy issue tracker. We have a very fancy leaderboard where people can match their performances. And we have a whole financial portal that keeps people's, like companies' targets real, which means real numbers, real performance.
Excellent. I think what I really like from that interface I saw, and it obviously, you know, it's intentional, it ties in with your business, is the use of a golden egg, which I have to imagine is something you're always striving for.
Golden egg is a metaphor, right, that we all use every time we actually refer to profit or to something financially nice to us. In our system, we use golden egg as actually invoice. So people have to, when they generate income or generate something, they actually get a golden egg that sticks to their track record for a long time. And they basically compete each other because of that. So here's a golden egg, and I hope you find your golden goose.
Everybody wants to find a golden goose. Kanan with CubeEgg, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much. I hope you guys try it out, and please give us a feedback in case you have any ideas on how to make it better or more fun for you. Good luck.
Do a search for CubeEgg. All right, I'm standing here with Rory with Air Mule, and we were walking by, saw the sign. I was very intrigued by the idea of shipping with people, not with boxes. Tell us a little bit about Air Mule.
Sure. So Air Mule is a mobile app that allows travelers who sell their luggage space to shippers. Senders ship much faster, much cheaper worldwide, while travelers earn money when they fly.
So exactly. So as a traveler, so I've got, you know, a really, you know, large suitcase. I'm only filling it halfways, let's say, so I know that I have space to do something. What do I do as a traveler?
Yeah, so you'll download the app. We verify all our travelers. You'll list your available space, and then you'll start to receive shipping inquiries of different items like shoes or a purse. in the days before you leave. And you can accept or decline them. We'll get the packages to you. You can inspect them. We verify everything before you get it. And then you hand it off to our local shipping partner when you arrive at your destination.
What is the kind of lead time that you need on something? Because obviously there's figuring it out, then connecting with the right people, then getting that stuff to me so that I can fly with it.
Yeah, so typically people list their trip 1 to 2 weeks out at a minimum. You can list it out much further, but typically you receive inquiries within 3 to 4 days of leaving. Yeah.
And then as a person who is, well, are there any safety actually kind of concerns with something like this? We're dealing with somebody else's stuff.
Yeah, so we verify all our shippers and travelers both offline and online. We have a copy of your driver's license or passport. We have your bank account or credit card information. We have your home address. We have documented photos and description of the item that you're shipping. So all this creates a paper trail around every single shipment and transaction. And we inspect everything for anything that isn't supposed to be on an airplane.
Right. And then, okay, so I get on the other side of, you know, I get to my destination. Got this thing in my bag. What do I do now?
Yeah, so right now we mainly focus between U.S. and China. So when you arrive at your airport, we have someone pick it up from you either at the airport or your hotel, and they handle the last mile of delivery.
That is super cool. So what is what's your vision? Like, what is the trajectory of what you're kind of working on right now? What's your next step?
Yeah, well, after we conquer U.S. and China and have created a reliable and stable shipping channel, we hope to expand globally and enable anyone to travel the world for free.
Fantastic. That's cool. What kind of money are we talking about here?
What do you mean? Per flight?
Yeah.
On average right now, travelers make between $300 and $600, but we hope to increase that as time goes on. Yeah.
That is really appealing. So it's AirMule, airmule.com, and you have apps for iOS and Android?
We're live on iOS right now.
Okay. And Android, is that coming soon?
Android needs an update. It'll be going pretty soon.
Yes. Excellent.
Rory with AirMule, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
All right, we're standing in this crazy, crazy booth over here, surrounded by screens, flashing all over the place, with Jerry from iTutor Group. How's it going, Jerry?
Absolutely good. What a great conference.
Yeah, so far so good. It's super busy. You've got excellent placement here. So tell us a little bit about iTutor Group. I mean, obviously it's about education to begin with.
So iTutor Group is the world's largest online global education platform. We've been around for about 18 years now. We have probably over about 100,000 active students with 10,000 teaching consultants in about 80 countries, all learning with live interaction from their home.
Okay. How is that happening? Like, are they using just a laptop, or, you know, I imagine it's spreading out into the world of VR and all that kind of stuff, because that enables a lot more.
So we have a couple of ways that they engage on our platform. So it's all live. So they can use their laptop, of course, but we actually see a lot of mobile, meaning tablets, actually, because we have obviously video, audio, and a whiteboard. We've also started using, as you mentioned, kind of AR technology. We call it Tutor Glass. Okay. So you can experience what our teaching consultant is experiencing, whether they're doing yoga or playing pool or music. So you're actually there with them as they're explaining the concepts. So, and then we all have, like, for example, set-top boxes, smart TVs. So there's a lot of ways to engage in a live interaction.
And this isn't, like, I know you were showing me this screen up on the wall here. You've got the platform that's based around education, but you've also kind of, and live education at that, you've also kind of spread it out so that it encompasses other things, like having reporters out on the floor here to kind of broaden what exactly is the purpose of that.
So when we first started, we went into education, and specifically we went to language learning. So our largest business unit right now is VIP ABC in China, learning English language learning. And so what we realized very quickly as part of our vision and mission is that this platform can be stretched over different verticals. So after we started doing English language learning for professional adults, for example, they started using our platform for corporate training, sales training, product training. For our junior market, our kid market, K-12 market, they were learning English. Now they're learning math, science, and other subject matters. So this idea is we built an ecosystem actually around our platform. And the biggest piece, actually, beyond just what you see in the live interaction, is actually the engine behind it, called DCGS, Dynamic Course Generation System. So we're 24/7, 365, on demand. We have 10,000 teachers around the world. You want to learn, let's say, English, right? But you're a marketing person. You don't want to learn ball, pen, cup. You want to learn search engine optimization. You want to learn pay-per-click, display ads. So we have to find the right teaching consultant that knows that knowledge and that also can teach you English at the same time, plus the content, and then the classmates too. So that on-demand session is very engaging.
Is this really just directly one-on-one, or does it broaden out into a group scenario?
So we have small group class settings. So you're looking maybe 3 to 4 students at any given time. We also have large class settings, what we call special sessions, which is more like a webinar style, but highly engaging topic. It's still live. You can still interact, but not in the audio-video format. You just chat through the chat box.
Very cool stuff. So tell people if they're interested what they need to know to kind of get started.
Oh, absolutely. So definitely come to itutorgroup.com, learn a little bit about our products and our investors and what we've been doing. If they're interested in our platform, you can go to livehh2h.com and experience our platform firsthand.
Jerry with iTutor Group, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you. It's great talking to you.
So I was walking down the alley here, the startup alley, and I looked down on the table, and there were all sorts of lights flashing across it, as you can kind of see behind me. I'm standing here with George from Lampix. How's it going, George?
Good. How are you?
Doing awesome. It's really nice to kind of see what Lampix is all about. Tell me kind of where this began. What does Lampix solve?
So have you heard of Dracula?
Dracula?
Yeah. Yeah. Same place.
Oh, okay.
I'm not kidding. So my friend Mihai is from Brasov in Romania, and I'm from Romania as well. And we met when we were giving TEDx talks in Romania. He was talking about new user interfaces. I was talking about how to start a business. And so he invented this. And I was doing something else. I was doing fintech. And he showed me what he invented. I was like, well, I quit what I was doing to go run with him and build this together. That's how we started.
Okay, so explain a little bit about what Lampix is doing here. I see that we've got a big piece of technology kind of scanning an interface almost onto the table. What do we do here?
So this is augmented reality. So people are maybe familiar with Google Glasses or stuff like that. You put glasses and you see stuff on top of the reality, like information, like in pilots, you know, airplane pilots. This is very similar to that. Except we're not trying to solve everything for everybody. We're not trying to make the glasses where you walk everywhere, and no matter where you walk, it recognizes objects. It's very complicated. It's very difficult. People are working on that and making slow progress. So what we did is that we started limiting it to one flat, fixed surface. So by doing so, we made the problem much simpler. By making the problem much simpler, we make much faster progress, much more reliable things for much cheaper, too. So, for example, our hardware, instead of being custom hardware that you have to build the glasses, you know, if I'm familiar with, we just took off Amazon, a projector, 2 cameras, and a Raspberry Pi. We package it together. We 3D printed the shell, and there we have. That's our hardware. And this, we can mass manufacture it for really cheap. But all the know-how, all the intelligence of the system is in the software. So Mihai, my co-founder, the guy who invented it, he has 10 years of experience doing computer vision in Romania. He has a firm doing that. And he took all his experience, and he built a software in Amazon Cloud, which takes the pictures from the camera, processes it, and allows it to recognize objects, flat objects, big objects, but also hands or gestures. So the result is that you can make the surface, the table surface, could be a desk surface, a workbench, into a smart surface. Imagine this. Imagine you play crossword puzzles on your kitchen table, on the table. Imagine you go into a store and on the shelf next to the camera you want to buy, you see Amazon reviews and you can move the camera and you can see all kind of stuff about it. Or imagine you draw on the same piece of paper as a friend in China. This is what this does. And we have demos working.
So is this more geared towards, let's say a point of, like, a business? It's casting down for interactivity with the customer who walks through the door, or is this also kind of aimed at just general consumers that want to do cool stuff?
So unfortunately, we're not the size of Google. We're working on that. If we were the size of Google, we would make 100,000 of them, and we would sell it to consumers, to businesses, and so on. But we're a small company, we have limited funds, so we have to start with a small place. So we're going to probably start on retail, so shops. We're going to try to make people want to walk into the stores again, and when they walk in those stores, to really have fun, entertainment, and experience. Think Apple Store, but Apple Store for your shoe store, Apple Store for your sweater store. One particularity of the device is that it projects stuff, right? So you're very familiar with the smart screens or laptops, but this is the future, the way we're imagining it, where there's technology all over you, all around you, in your environment, but it's invisible. It only shows up when you want it, where you want it, for what you want, and then it disappears. So imagine this. You want enter the store. The store is a Chanel store. It works the same way as now. There's no screens. There's nothing. It's very classical, very good quality. And then you take a piece of shoe, a shoe off the shelf, and the shelf becomes animated. You see the latest Chanel fashion show with those shoes. You see what the designer was thinking when he made the shoes. You can see different colors. You can control it. You can move stuff around. Put the shoe back, it disappears. That's what we're going for. We're going to be the first application. We're going to do then collaboration. We have demos working where you draw on a piece of paper. I see what you draw. I draw on the same piece of paper on my screen. And then you see what I draw. So we have the webcam. We can work together from very far away for designers, engineers, and so on. And then we start making games. So imagine you have little monsters projected on your desk. And as you put different objects on the desk, they start shooting at the monsters, and it's fun. And you can mix reality with virtual reality and all that. So it's really breaking the digital physical barrier. I think it's the future we all dreamed about, and we're working on it.
And it seems pretty portable, and I'm sure over time, you know, the idea is to miniaturize it even more and as you scale and all that.
Absolutely. So right now, the size is given by the size of the projector inside, which is, by modern projectors, small, but by what's possible technologically, still huge. We can put bigger projectors, make it stronger, smaller projectors, make it weaker. The technology exists, we can use it right now. And while this is not something you want to put in your pocket, it's something you, with a shade, and this is what the shade looks like. So it makes it very neutral. So with the shade, it looks like a lamp. As a lamp, you can have one in your office, in your home, on your desk, at the work, in your workshop, in the factory, in the shop. So that's what we're going for. So our vision is for everybody to have a Lampix in their home, office, factory, shops, everywhere.
George with Lampix, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, we've been wandering around for a little while. Legs are kind of sore. I'm kind of getting hungry because, you know, they're serving some pastries and donuts behind me. But before I do that, let's thank the sponsor of today's episode. Braintree brings you this episode of TwitLive Specials. By next year, maybe even next week, there could be a whole new way to pay. Maybe it'll be in the next Bitcoin, or maybe, you know, the next Apple Pay, if they could pull that off, or maybe even both. Fortunately, Braintree's full stack payment platform is easily adaptable to whatever the future holds, so you can adapt easily as well. They accept everything from pounds to PayPal to whatever the next big innovation is from any device with just one simple integration. And when that new payment method comes along, all you really have to do is update a few lines of code and you're off and running. No late nights, no complicated recoding, no stress about staying ahead of the curve. Braintree Payments is here to help. Braintree gives you an easy way to accept multiple payment types with one simple integration. Integrating it into your app is literally, it's as easy as inserting a few lines of code and you're off and running. So you want to learn more about this, go to braintreepayments.com/twit. That's braintreepayments.com/twit. And now, before we head back inside, it's time for a donut. All right, I am standing in an undisclosed location with Ray and Mike from Sound Space. How's it going, Ray?
Great, how are you?
Doing awesome. And Mike, thank you for talking with us and showing us your technology.
Thank you for having us. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. Well, this is really cool technology. I'm a music nerd. Been a music nerd for a really long time, so I'm always kind of looking for new ways to control music, and that's exactly what SoundSpace is all about. Tell us a little bit about kind of the birth of SoundSpace and what it's all about.
Sure. So SoundSpace kind of came out of the fact that I was an engineering major but a music minor, and kind of a combination of those two passions. Started creating some electronic musical instruments in college, and somewhere along the lines, I think the third version of an instrument I created was SoundSpace, and then recently we've just ported it to virtual reality, so now you'll be able to create music in virtual reality and interact with virtual sounds too.
So, Mike, this obviously, it started differently, though. You were not doing this with the HTC Vive. When you initially started, you were doing it with a glove system. How did that work prior?
So, actually, the very first system we created was using these gloves that we sort of had strings attached to. And the idea was, like, these strings would, there was a sensor at the bottom of the string that would know where the end point of the string was. And we sort of hacked that together as, like, a pseudo, like, 3D tracking mechanism. And then we were lucky enough to get in touch with a company called Ascension that makes these 3D electromagnetic trackers for like medical uses. I'm not entirely sure what the uses are, but it definitely wasn't making music. But we just decided to sew them into a pair of gloves, and those are actually really cool because they gave us like 3D position and orientation tracking. So we sort of just used that and had a 2D interface that the musician would look at to know where their hands were in the 3D environment. And that was the first prototype before we ported it over to the Vive.
I mean, the Vive, the whole virtual reality aspect of this really kind of takes it and makes it a little bit more obvious. Like when you put the goggles on, you start working in the environment. I mean, you want that to be intuitive. Absolutely. Do you think that this is the better direction to go now?
Absolutely. And I think both in terms of intuitiveness, how easy it is to pick up, and also just in terms of costs, like the sensor we were using before was pretty expensive. But like Mike mentioned, we were already kind of doing virtual reality just without virtual reality, without the headset. Really, we created a virtual space that you could interact with these gloves, and now it's just we can see it in front of our faces and actually see the space and where your hands are relative to that space. So
I guess explain a little bit about what people will be looking at. I mean, we were playing around with it beforehand. I got to go in totally, you know, without very much walkthrough at all. We kind of basic walkthrough of controls and everything. And I mean, I was able to jump in, and I probably wasn't the best musician in the world using the technology, but it was pretty easy to pick up. What are the main components of kind of the interface and what you're doing with it?
Sure. So like you said, we're really trying to focus on making it super intuitive and super just kind of like common sense. Like I think when we started this idea, the question we were asking is like, what if you could just hold sound and it was like a sound object between your hands and just manipulate it? And I think that's really the direction that we want to go, which is like creating these really physical, fun, interactive sound objects that allow you to express yourself. But what's there right now is kind of a series of boxes that you can place your hands into, and each box controls different sounds. You can create effects and control effects within those boxes, and really play notes with the trackpad and use the triggers. And we also have air drums that you can, you know, play around with and use it like you expect it to be used. So,
okay. Yes, you have to hold it while you're hitting it.
You schooled me when you played around with it a little bit, Mike. I watched a little bit of the demo online, and that was with the gloves aspect. And then now we're in kind of the VR space with this. And it's all based around a single clip of music, let's say, a single performance. How does this scale out beyond just this one, let's say, project into other, you know, people's kind of customized projects? Mm.
So I think one of the things that we envision for this project is sort of having it be more of a platform. So right now it is sort of geared towards a single piece because we've written this piece, you know, in conjunction with using the gloves. So it's sort of tailored around that. But ideally, you know, musicians can come in, they set up their own like custom VR spaces in the SoundSpace platform. They set up the boxes and the parameters or whatever instruments we have in the future exactly how they want. They, you know, interface it, whatever music creation tools they have. Maybe it's Ableton, maybe it's Reason, maybe it's whatever. And they sort of tailor it to their own workflow. And ideally, they would have the ability to customize their own, like, physical space, or I guess virtual space, in a sense, to how they wanted to play music. So that's one of the things we were, like, looking forward to.
So in that regard, you're thinking like the almost like the DAW or the software, right, that it's interfacing with is where the kind of variability of the sounds and the samples and all that kind of stuff are drawing from. This ends up becoming a control surface for it.
Yeah, I think for the time being, I think that people, you know, VR is still very new, and I think that people are going to want to use the tools that they're familiar with. But especially as we move towards like this really intuitive kind of consumer product, where we really want to transform anybody who's not even a musician into just like put these on and you can play music and you'll sound great. I think as we move towards that, we're going to be incorporating some of the native sound generation capabilities into our platform, so that you won't need to hook it up with an Ableton or a Pro Tools to do some of those sounds.
Yeah. So there's actually a bandpass filter between your hands. So if you play a note, don't play a note.
I see.
And the bottom is twist.
Dude, Yeah, oh man, so.
So if you want to do a full like step bend, you twist both up.
What do you think about just like music production in general and what VR enables for this? Like, when I think of just a recording studio environment, for example, so much money has to go into, you know, A, the space, B, the equipment to fill it, C, the capabilities of the engineer sitting behind the desk. But you end up in a world in VR where literally you can lay all that stuff out in a virtual sense and spread it out. Do you think that's kind of where all this stuff is heading right now? What do you think?
I think in some sense, but one of the coolest things about VR is that you don't have to limit yourself to the same types of setups that you see in like a real recording studio or a real real physical space, right? So one of the things that VR opens up is like the ability to have like crazy types of like music creation elements. Like, you know, maybe it's like literally like what Ray mentioned, like a blob that you're holding and you're sort of twisting it to like create different sounds. And I think that's one of the areas that, you know, people can be the most creative. That's one of the areas that we're definitely trying to explore.
Yeah, it's easy to get locked into the mindset of this is how it's always been done, so let's do this in a different format. And the reality is something like VR actually enables for you to create sound or manipulate sound in ways that like you wouldn't be able to do in the real sense.
Absolutely. And I think that it's a balance there because, again, like, you know, how I mentioned, we want to build something familiar so that people can pick it up and they can integrate with their current, you know, music software and also create familiar elements that they know maybe from a music studio, like mixing boards and whatnot. But then like begin to expand on that and kind of stretch the, you know, user's mind as to what they could really be making or how they could be making music in virtual reality. Because if you really think about it, there's so much potential. You have so many more degrees of freedom. You have so much more control. You have 3D. You have 3D space. You have like a whole world that you can literally shape to be whatever the hell you want. And you can do things like in real life, you can't just change the reverb of a physical room by like making the walls bigger and like changing the physical surface of the walls. But you can do that in virtual reality, and you can have completely virtualized environments that are flexible and really just awesome. So.
Yeah. I was very excited to try out this technology before I put the goggles on. And then afterwards, it's like my brain is like running in a million different directions. Like, man, you could do this, you could do that. Yeah. It's really cool stuff. What is the next step? What's the direction that you guys are taking right now?
Sure. So I think right now we're here at TechCrunch looking for, you know, advisors and potentially investors so that we can really go full time on this project and roll out that prototype. Right now it is just kind of a demo running on our machine, but roll it out to all the Steam store, to all the, you know, online channels to get this out and just start getting people to use it, see what they think, get their ideas. Like, you had great ideas. We're going to try to incorporate some of those. We'll probably take all the credit, but
that's all right. You can take that because then I get to use it later.
Absolutely. And then really just getting people to use it and just continuing to refine it to be what people want. So.
Well, it was really exciting stuff, and I love kind of where it began and kind of where it's heading here. How long do you think it's going to be before people can get their hands on it?
Honestly, probably within a few months. Like, I would say 6 months at most. And I think I mentioned earlier, but music is just the first step for us, and we really want to expand beyond that in the future and look towards just content creation in general and like what you can do with 3D workspaces in terms of allowing people to express their imagination and creativity. So.
All right, Ray, pleasure talking with you about SoundSpace. Great. Mike, pleasure. Really cool stuff. Now apparently I have to get an HTC Vive because once this comes out, I have to manipulate my own music with this. All right, so what does it take to power 360-degree video online when you're streaming it? Not just when it's on device, but when you're actually streaming it. I'm here with CUI from Vizbit, which is, I mean, it's underlying technology. It's not something that you necessarily look at unless you're looking at content, but it's how the content is being treated to stream into the device, right?
That's right, yeah. So we try to solve, I think that's a kind of fundamental problem for VR industry. Like, people spend tons of money to build a camera and make camera and make VR content, which has high quality. But high quality video means it's big in size. And given the current internet speed, people cannot stream high quality VR content to the users. And we build the technology to help them to stream VR content at high quality, 4K, 8K, even over the average Wi-Fi and LTE. Yeah.
So I put on the Gear VR that we have here and watched, I think it's Verse, is it? It's a demo for Verse. Or...
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so we have a bunch of partners. We try to work together and to to make good VR content and deliver to the end users.
What I found so interesting is that when you're in the environment and you're looking around, like from what you've explained to me, is that the technology that you have is only streaming the part of the view that you're looking at, the thing that's actually in your view. But you know, there's so many places you can go at the spur of a moment. What about like latency of that streaming? How do you treat that?
Yeah, that's actually the key difficulty of this kind of solution. So we combine a lot of technologies like vision, computer graphics, and also machine learning. So we try to learn where you may look at in the next moments. And sometimes machines are much faster than human movements. So you think you move fast, but from the machine perspective, you are moving slowly. So before you turn to a new direction, we already prepare the new frame for you. So that's a bunch of like technology. We have patents to cover that technology and make that happen for you.
So there's some sort of kind of indication when I'm a user and I'm turning this way slightly, that's a higher probability that I'm going to continue turning in that direction. So you're probably going to load more in that direction.
Yes, so that's one trick we call motion prediction.
Okay.
And also we have a lot of tricks to make all the computation and the streaming fast. So we try to reduce the latency as much as possible. And also another trick will be human eyes take time to focus. So when you turn your head around, your eyes take a while to focus. So another trick will be we give a like low resolution first and very quickly turn the low resolution to high resolution. And your eyes cannot detect it.
Especially when you consider the fact that, like, just in real life, what we're looking at directly is perfectly in view, and everything in the peripheral, yeah, I mean, it's kind of faded. It's just your peripheral vision, so it's kind of the same concept.
Yeah, so that's like we combine a bunch of tricks, and then and at the end of the day, we don't have to tell our customer what happened. For them, they just look at the video, and everything's high resolution. So that's our goal.
CUI with Visbit, where can people, where are people going to interact with your technology? Are you already out there? What's your plan?
So now we are at the stage of beta program. So we have, last month, we launched our pilot program. So some partners, they sign up to our program. It's more than 40. And we work together, so we serve them. It's like B2B program. And they have platforms, they have contents. We are back-end solution providers. So we work very closely. It's a beta program. I hope very soon we can public to the whole industry.
I hope so too, because that's going to really solve a lot of problems, potentially future problems that companies are going to have in streaming this kind of technology. The company is Visbit, and been speaking with CUI. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you.
One thing the internet really needs is a little more positivity. I think we can all agree to that. Standing with me here is Michael E. Parker with Mint Show. How's it going, Michael?
Going good, going good. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's really great to see your product, see Mint Show, because it is all about positivity. Personally, I feel like I'm a pretty positive guy, so I enjoy when other people embrace this whole positive aspect of things. Where, I'm sure there's a story, a path that took you from one place into creating Mint Show. What is that path?
Well, growing up here in the inner city, I went through a lot of challenge in my home, and through those challenges, I had to overcome them and still try to obtain success. And a lot of people who were in the neighborhood I was in just honestly didn't see a way out, and they didn't see that they could succeed. And I found out that through a different way of thinking and taking advantage of opportunity, that I could change my perspective and change actually my behavior and get a different result. And that's honestly what I want to give away. Every time I see someone who discovers that they're more than they thought they were, that just inspires me every time, and that's what we're trying to give away through this application.
That's super cool. That I love that stuff. It gives me goosebumps. So tell me a little bit about Mint Show specifically, how it helps you do this. I mean, you know, we think of social networks that we've seen all over the place, and we're used to seeing like the heart or the thumbs up or whatever. So these are ways that, you know, users interact with the app. But with Mint Show, it's really all kind of around, you know, centered around the idea of positive thinking, positive, right, you know, promoting your life in a positive way. How does it do that?
Well, actually, I think the key to Mint Show is really we want to hone in, because social media has always been very addictive, very habit forming. The problem is we find ourselves just looking at content and allowing people to flood our mind with all sorts of things. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Goes from something positive to a street fight. We want to create something that is sincerely positive all the way through. And what Mint Show is about, a mint is basically a moment in time that you felt happy, positive, or inspired. And the show is for showrooms that we create where you can begin to set up a specific place for people to showcase those inspirations. Now, by doing that consistently and using a different culture, so instead of like, we high five. Instead of commenting, we compliment, and the pun is intended, and we re-mint instead of retweet. We use different language, and we help people change their thought patterns while they're using social media. So, in essence, while they're using social media, they're changing how they think, and it changes how they feel, then it changes what they do. And so, essentially, if we can get people in a state of uplift more minutes throughout the day than they are dealing with just the normal aspects and pressures of life, we feel we've made the world a little bit better.
I know for my own self, at least, sometimes you log into like any social network and I almost just kind of feel, I don't know, depending on what you get in your feed, you know, it kind of brings you down. You kind of, sometimes I open Facebook and I don't know why I'm opening Facebook, you know.
Right.
So
right.
It's nice
That's
to be
right.
able to open something and feel good about it. Are these people, like, are you connecting with people you already know, or are you meeting new people through Mint Show? What is kind of the ideal approach there?
Well, that's the beauty of it, is that we're really essentially aggregating inspiration. And the way we're doing that is everyone who posts, we have these signature showrooms where if you post something inspiring, we categorize things differently. So you can post an amazement. I might post an acknowledgement, and the mint is spelled M-I-N-T, and we keep using it, encouragement. You know, I can keep going on with that. But we have a lot of fun with it. And so essentially, we're allowing people to meet other people who have similar inspirations, similar thoughts, and a similar struggle of how do I stay positive in a world that continually is like gravity bringing me down. And so you meet other people, but you can also connect with your own friends, and we try to build it in a way where you can easily bring in people that you know. And the key to a mint, you know, sometimes if something's a little tart, you give someone a mint to refresh themselves. Well, this is what we want to do for people's life. If we can help refresh people by giving them just that one moment throughout the day where it causes them to get in a different mindset. And that's what Mint Show is about.
Excellent. Mint Show sounds incredible. Michael, where can people, like, can people find the app right now and hop on board and get started? Or kind of what's your plan here for the next little bit?
Absolutely. So the app is now in the iPhone store, iOS store. It's also in the Google Play store. So if you've got an Android, if you got an iPhone, and if you're on the web, you can go to mintshowapp.com, or you can download it from the App Store. And we're welcoming everyone. And we're here at TechCrunch for our open beta launch. And we're going to have our full launch later in the fall. But everything is there now to get you going and get you inspired. And we welcome the world to come and enjoy Mint Show.
Hop on the positivity train. Thank you so much, Michael, for telling us about Mint Show.
Thank you for having me.
Really appreciate it.
Pleasure.
So when you're walking the halls here at TechCrunch Disrupt, you're not used to seeing very many shipping products. I can see two shipping products in the hands of Sergio with Stir. How's it going, Sergio?
It's awesome, Jason. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. You've got to be excited. You've got a product, and it's fully packaged, and you're ready to sell it.
I absolutely am, and I'm not actually selling it, so this is not a day-to-day sales job, but we are shipping, right, which is extraordinary. So we have here is a first-of-its-kind ecosystem that ties together nutrition and motion. So about 4 years ago, we started a company with the idea that we can convert motion into nutrition. So, you know, you are what you do, right? If you spend your day at a desk, or you go cycling every day, or you stand up at your job, that's going to have a lot of, you know, effect on what you need to consume. So we started by looking at the data. What can data tell us about a person that's moving? And then we end up building our own devices. So what I have here is the industry's first customized multivitamin that uses our own device. So it's in this box. So the device has a fitness and activity and nutrition tracker combined with our customized multivitamins. So if you live in Arizona like me, you're going to have less vitamin D, for sake of discussion, right? Because we have a lot of sun. But if you live in San Francisco, then you may need a little bit of vitamin D, especially, you know, in the summer, right? So depending on what you do and where you are, this device will adjust your vitamins as we go. And of course, we have a whole ecosystem that goes from a wearable to a smart scale. I don't have it in my hand right now, which you step on, right? So the scale measures all kinds of other important data, like your body mass, your water content. Why water? Because ultimately you need more water, right? So this is where the smart bottle comes into play. Industry's first smart bottle, which has a smart cap that continuously monitors your life, right? combined with the other devices. So not only knows how much water you should be drinking, mom's always tells you, right, you should drink more water, right? But it actually knows how much activity you did and what your scale says. So if you had a rough night, right, or maybe an exercise night, right, and you have a lot of dehydration, the scale will pick that up and adjust your water consumption for next day. Or if you went for a long bike ride or a long hike, right, of course, we'll adjust that not only based on your activity, but also based on environmental inputs as well, right?
So, and these devices, are they sending back to the wearable that you have on your wrist, or are they sending back to the phone that you have in your pocket?
Both, right? So you have obviously a display on the wearable itself, so we'll tell you how much you need to go and how much cups and the like. But it's also making the actual product. So each one of these things has a nutritional product behind it. So think of it as more of like a razor and a blade model, right? So devices are a razor, right? We would like you to have them, but you don't have to use our devices. As a matter of fact, you can connect 14 leading devices like Fitbit, Jawbone, Strava, Runkeeper, right? It can be app-based or device-based. But ultimately, when you do, you will end up with a customized vitamin, right? Or a customized protein, right? So this happens to be a vitamin, right? They're served industries first, single-serve sachets. They're liquid, so they can be easily consumed. You will snap them in half and dispense into a container. So you can only take the nutrition you need. So your vitamin will be entirely different than mine, right? A whole bunch of reasons. Where we live, what we do, how we operate it. So that's kind of the general idea. You will get something that's custom for you based on the actual observed data. Right?
That's interesting. I mean, so much of what we have here at TechCrunch especially is pure technology, 100% technology. It really seems like you guys are kind of half and half. You got your feet in the technology space, but you've also, I mean, you're also creating and distributing vitamins to promote health. I mean, there have got to be different challenges for both of those sides of things.
You know, Jason, I wish I could tell you that we got this right the first time. We didn't, right? We were doing pure tech, right? So 4 years ago, we thought, why don't we just make an awesome algorithm, right? And then people will just love us, right? Well, the reality is it's very hard to implement it. So just because I tell you you need more vitamin D, it's actually very hard to implement it in your daily life, right? So we end up having to build all of it, right? So data wasn't enough. We needed to actually convert data into action, right? And that's what nutritional products came about. So you're absolutely right. We're a bit of a hybrid between nutrition, technology, and then ultimately wearables. So, you know, it's a little bit of a crazy world, right?
Yeah. So where can people, I mean, you're shipping. So where are people going to be able to find your product and get on board?
It's on styr.com, so styr.com, and of course in-app. So what we found very interesting is most people start with a single device. So they'll start with a bracelet, they'll start with a scale. Within 3 days, they'll buy the second or third device. So it's a very interesting ecosystem because all of a sudden you realize that the more devices you have, the better and more accurate the outputs are, right?
That's pretty great for Styr to have complementary devices that pull you into
that's
other directions.
That's a story and we're sticking to it, right?
Yeah. All right, Sergio with Styr, thank you so much for talking with us today. Appreciate it. So I was walking down the halls, and then I looked up, and I saw what looked to be a modular phone, and I'm very, very interested to talk with Jason about NextPack, which looks, well, I'm sure you get this all the time, like I've been really excited about Aura, Project Aura.
Yeah, that's right. We get that all the time, and everyone says, oh, you're making a modular phone, but in actual fact, no, we're actually making a modular phone case and modular technology. So that's one big difference that we always have to lead with. Otherwise, I think in the wrong track.
Yeah. But a modular phone, I mean, Project Aura basically has been reported, sources anyway, saying that it's probably not going to be, you know, followed through. So this is a way of kind of peeling it back, though, and bringing it to anybody.
Yeah, exactly that. And we feel like this is a much better approach because we actually do modular phone cases for Apple devices as well as Samsung devices. So S6... iPhone and so forth. We're not limited to saying to the user, you've got to throw away your current phone and buy a new phone to get modularity. You can add a modular accessory to your existing phone. Excellent. So that's a big difference and one that we like to impress upon.
All right, cool. So walk us through this a little bit. So this is a Samsung Galaxy device with the NextPack case on it. How does it all work together?
Yeah, so the cool thing is that because it's just a case, you can have these module pieces plugged into Apple cases or Samsung cases. You don't have to have modules specific to a make and model of phone. So as I plug in each of these devices to the backside of the phone case into the slot, the companion app appears on the interface. So it's a really good way of bringing hardware with software. So I plug in, for example, this is a shortcut button. You can map it to, you know, auto dial your mom, auto dial pizza, or map it to whatever function you want to shortcut to. And as you plug it in, it appears on the phone interface.
And so it's all hot swappable. So you could just along the way be like, I want to, you know, improve this functionality. Just pop it in, and from that point on, it's there.
Right, that's right. So it's all plug and play. You don't need to power off the phone. Just take it out, plug it in, and instantly that feature is available for your phone to start leveraging. So we've got really cool modules. I think a lot of people ask us, well, what tech do you have? So the obvious ones are, you know, we've got better audio speaker, we've got extra battery power, we've got a USB memory stick to add extra memory to your device. But what really excites me is all the IoT applications. So this, for example, is a breathalyzer, which is very useful because I'm Australian and we have a tendency to drink a lot. We might need this a little bit later in the day. Air pollution is a big one. We do have a presence in China, so and we all know pollution is a bit of a problem in China, so that's a very useful module for me personally. Temperature and humidity modules, and the whole swathe of modules that are coming out through our developer community through this developer kit. So we have, and this is why we're in the US doing all these hackathons, is because we want developers to make the next modules. Laser distance, blood sugar devices, radiation, temperature sensors, UV, all sorts of different use cases that are coming out through the community, not from our company. So that's where we really think there's no ceiling, is getting a community to help build this company and build these IoT modular products.
The more people you can get on supporting this hardware with more pieces of hardware that they've created, the better your ecosystem is.
That's right. And we also have a whole community of software app developers, so they can make apps on top of the modules. And we know that the best hardware maker is generally the worst software maker, and vice versa. So if you're a gun hardware guy, just make hardware. Make the best possible radiation sensor you can make. If you're a software guy, you make the apps for that radiation sensor. You can combine different use cases and have a single app getting information from two modules or three modules, or a single module might have multiple apps for different use cases. So we're really breaking the barrier between hardware and software and allowing individuals to create modular products focusing on what they're good at, what their skill set is, rather than saying create a new company and try to make an entire device yourself. So we're not about that. So
try and move every single person onto that new platform. Instead, it just plugs in with what they already have.
Exactly that. Exactly.
There have to be challenges, though, in doing this sort of a peripheral piece of hardware, you know, and making this work with Android versus iOS. I mean, what would you say was the easier platform to do this with?
Well, luckily, if I take this case apart, you'll see in the Android version you have the USB connector, which is open source. Everyone can use a USB connector. The Apple one is a much more closed ecosystem. So if I take away the Apple phone, you've got the Lightning connector, and the only supplier for that connector is Apple. So you need to be licensed with their MFI program to be able to do that, and that is a process that we're working through with Apple, and that it's not present on the Android ecosystem. Apart from that, generally everything is the same. The way the software works is the same is because we're using a cross-platform solution. And the individual module apps that appear on the screen, they're actually web view apps. So they're written in HTML5. They're like mini websites. So that's a very good way of allowing developers to create a single application that works on both platforms.
I mean, that's the beauty of HTML5. Jason, with NextPack, I don't know, can people get out and get this right now?
We're actually in our first production now. So the first 800 units are being built as we speak. They'll arrive towards the second half of October, and we're going to be launching that with our hackathon event, which we're organizing one in San Francisco in the last week of October. So what we're doing, we're not selling these through shops at the moment, but we're giving these products out for feedback and assessment through our hackathon events. So stay tuned for the San Francisco October event, because that's going to be our official launch in the US, and we're all excited to be here to do that. We've got a bit of an internal pressure test event that we're doing on the 19th of September next week in Dallas with one of our investors, Maxim Integrated Circuits. So that's an internal hackathon event with about 50 engineers as a precursor to bigger things to come.
All right, Jason with NextPack, thank you for talking with us today.
Good on you. Thank you.
I've got a little pair of headphones in my backpack, but they probably suck compared to Zip Buds. Joining me right now is Ryan with Zip Buds. How's it going, sir?
Going well. Great. Thanks.
All right, and Robin on the other side of me.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome. So it's good to kind of see the product in person. We kind of saw it before coming to the event. Tell us a little bit about ZipBuds.
So ZipBuds has been around as a company for the last 8 years. We make sport headphones. And so what really we did here was we set out to create a wireless earbud. And about a year ago, we thought, what are we going to do? Are we going to follow something that's already out there, or do we want to do something that's really never been done? And so with Rob's lead, we went out and talked to thousands of people at races, at gyms, talking to users about their experience, what they like, what they don't like, and really what are their biggest pain points in the industry. And we identified 5 thematic categories. And so we set out to see how many of these we could really fix. And so thought, hey, you know, if we can shoot for 5 and see how many we can get, and I think we did an all right job, and we tried to address all 5 with the Catalyst.
Excellent. Okay, so then there are, you know, these challenges. What are some of the kind of key challenges that ZipBuds is addressing?
Yeah, we started with fit. You know, everybody out there always has a complaint. I can't get these earbuds to stay in my ears. They're not comfortable. They're falling out, especially all sizes and shapes of ears, whether it's men, women, it doesn't matter. So, you know, we developed a system that has 144 different combinations so that you can get that perfect custom fit tuned to your ears. Mm-hmm. Next, it was battery life. You know, the average, I think it's 4 to 6 hours, all the leading sport wireless earbuds, that's how long their battery lasts. With Catalyst, we're delivering 15 hours. You know, we've custom tooled 2 batteries that are built into the product and a 3rd that's a magnetic clip-on battery for extra 5 hours when you're running out of juice. So it's more than 2.5 times most of the products on the market. Also, another thing, waterproofing these products is extremely important. Everybody claims that theirs are waterproof, but it's the number one leading cause of damage for a wireless sport earbud. So we took 3 different measures to ensure that you can literally take this thing underwater for up to 30 minutes at a time. It's not designed to be swam in, but it's designed to stand up to any amount of sweat that you can pour into it or rain when you're out being active. Finally, the style. You know, we wanted to create a product that you could wear not just in the gym, but also take out to work, on your commute to work, and not look like a goofball. Because let's face it, all wireless sport earbuds kind of look the same. They have that sporty, big, bulky look, whether it's the ear hooks or the neck-mounted collars that are getting really popular right now. We wanted to create something that held up in the gym functionally, but then also looked really hot when you're going out to your daily commute. And to round everything out, it's the sound quality. Because to be perfectly honest, all wireless sport earbuds are pretty mediocre sounding, and nobody's really put some focus into that area. I can guarantee this is the best sounding wireless sport earbud in the entire planet. We've built a hybrid driver system that utilizes both dynamic drivers and balanced armature drivers. It's a setup you typically won't see in an earbud under $400 or $500. So, yeah.
I don't know. What do they look like in? Like, how do you throw these into your ear? I mean, how is it different?
They're pretty easy. So what Rob talked about in addressing fit, we shrunk the earbud housings to make them smaller, more ergonomically optimized for all ears. And so they fit in, and we redesigned some stabilizers. We have a bunch of different types of stabilizers, but these are ones we redesigned with some PhD audiologists. So they ergonomically fit into ears. I'll throw them in for you.
Yeah.
Just throw it behind your head, and you just pop them right in. And you can see that it's kind of locked into your ear, and they're not going anywhere.
Right.
And then when you're ready to work out, you just tighten it up here in the back. And you can jump, you can move. The stabilizers, the weightless stability system, fuses to your neckline. So when you're running, they're not going anywhere. When you're jump roping, box jumps, whatever fitness activity you do, they stay put. They're pretty nice.
And you've got the battery in there as well. Is that part of where the battery housing is contained?
Cool. So in addressing the battery life, we custom tooled 3 different batteries. So 2, 1 on each side, so give it that weight to smelt on. And then as Rob has, it has a magnetic battery clip that gives you 5 additional hours. So when you're living life on the go and you're working, you can't be tethered to a cord.
Yeah,
it's not easy to keep these things charged up when you're not thinking about it, or have it stashed away in a pocket that kind of takes care of that. So can people buy these right now? Like, what is kind of the call to action for people who are interested in getting on the board?
So we're literally launching these on Kickstarter Tuesday morning, tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
And we are extremely excited about it. You know, the early backers are going to get a huge discount. This product's going to be extremely competitively priced, and we can't wait to bring it out to everybody.
Excellent.
So that is ZipBuds if they go to Kickstarter tomorrow. Zip Buds Catalyst, and they go to Kickstarter, do a search for that, they can get on board. Awesome. All right. So, Robin, really appreciate you showing us what you got there.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Absolutely. And Ryan, real pleasure. And you have two different styles, so I like that. You've got different styles for different people.
Oh, yeah. No, we actually, in developing these, we worked with some fashion bloggers to really make sure we hit the market with who we're targeting. And so, hopefully, let's get you to try these on and give it a shot.
All right. I will try these on, and that is Zip Buds. Check them out on Kickstarter. When you hear about a dog PC, you have to stop and take a look at a computer that is made for dogs. I'm here with Kevin with Dog PC.
Yeah, this is a dog PC, and we developed this dog PC for the dog, and we know the dog has his string. So we developed this machine because they always lonely and boring in the home.
So as a pet owner, I can have the dog PC in my home, and then when I'm away from home, the dog can still keep in touch with me while I'm gone?
Yeah, yeah, of course. Because our machine has the dog can play the game and study and communication with the people. So he is very, very happy.
So we need to bring even our pets into the world of technology. What kind of games can a dog play on the dog PC?
It can play the touch game. Like the ball is moving on the screen and the dog touches it. The food is Jordy.
So when the dog is playing this game, if they do well at the game, they're actually rewarded with food outside of the feeder?
Yes, she gets the food and he will be happy and he plays the game again. So he's not sleepy alone.
So even when you're gone, the dog does not feel like they are alone. Now, can I, on my phone, talk directly to the dog that happens to be in front of the dog PC?
Yeah, of course. You can use your phone. You can use your phone and talk to your kid like this. Hello, come on, baby.
Hello, come on, baby.
Yeah, you can like this, talk to your baby, and you can also...
That's cool. Okay, so I'm assuming that the dog PC is not in stores yet. What is the next step for dog PC? Are you guys looking for funding right now?
Yeah, we are planning for the funding, so we can make our product to the market. We need about the 1.5 million.
1.5 million of funding. So then, Kevin, people who want to find out more about Dog PC, they just go to t-pi.com.
Yeah.
Kevin, thank you so much for taking your time out of the day to talk with us about this.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I love the idea of a PC for a dog. This is really cool stuff. All right, so I'm about winded down. I know that because my legs feel like they're about to fall off. We walked around this floor all day long, but I just saw some people walking around with some freshly filled cups full of beer, which is my indication that tells me we need to walk back in there and get some. But we've had a lot of fun checking out TechCrunch Disrupt here in San Francisco. You can always subscribe to these live events, the coverage that we do at twit.tv/specials. And if you want to find me, Jason Howell, I'm all over the Twit Network. You can find me on Tech News Today, all about Android and Android App Arena. Thank you all so much for watching. We'll see you next time.